Just to mother's next reading. We'll just hear the next passage. No, I made from Sunil, but you don't have it here. That was the end of the CD. Yes. Yes, please.
I liked very much that performance that was done in the 12th prayers for the mother.
Yes.
And I did a short cut, a few excerpts in on YouTube, about 10, 12 minutes, with French subtitles, and now we have another version with English subtitles, and another one with Italian subtitles. So that you will find on YouTube. So that's why it's worth really doing this hard work. Shadowan helped me with the text, which of course I have just to take what I have taken out of the red cut, but still it's a beautiful thing and it's a big enough when people were there. That's why I wanted to document it. So maybe next time what to do.
Yes, Manohar's referring to this performance prepared by a young Aurevilian, Céline, from France, for the 29th of February. She selected 12 prayers and meditations of the mother. And she asked us if she could present these in our amphitheater. And we saw her coming and rehearsing for about a month beforehand. And on 29th February, she presented that performance. Unfortunately, so many other things were happening in that week. Not many people turned up. And we suggested to her that she could repeat it to commemorate Mother's first arrival, 29th of March. But 29th of March was a Tuesday, I believe, or it was some day when it didn't work. So she did it on 30th March in our amphitheater, just at twilight, with only our own lighting. We didn't borrow any special lighting. So she has somehow performed this series of prayers from the mother, as if waking up in the morning and going through the hours of the day and coming to the end of the day. Of course, it was all in French, but nevertheless, we prepared a booklet in French and in English.
And
she memorized everything, and she performed it very, very nicely. And Joelle was able to take a video of the first performance, but Manohar was there, but the light level was too low. So he has now done on the basis of the second performance on 30th. Yes.
It was better because the day had become longer.
Yes, there was a little bit more light. Yes. But she deliberately wanted it in that kind of dreamy twilight. No? And so that is now available.
Not all, only, let's say, the end of 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Part, no, yes.
It was about.
But what I wanted to do, because not always it's easy to follow French for English people and so on, during the performance. So I think first the subtitles in French. Then I said, okay, since the subtitles I translated, thanks to your translation in English. And then I said, well, I'm Italian, I'm going to help you. I can always Italian. Don't speak each other. And so it is also in Italian.
Yes, so there will be three different versions, in French and English. And it's not my translation, this is mostly Sri Aurobindo's translation, the official translation in Mother's collected works.
Only the Italian one is my translation.
Okay, so that's something to look out for. So, sorry, I didn't say good morning, everybody. Good morning. We are reading in Book 9, the Book of Eternal Night, and Canto 2, the journey in eternal night. And we've reached page 589. I think we're about halfway through this canto, or a bit more. Yeah, about halfway through. Savitri is following the soul of Satyavan as it's led away by the god of death. And she has been, despite all the darkness which death has cast on her, she has been able to continue following. And he keeps trying to make her go back. He discourages her. He says, "Hope not to win back to thee, Satyavan." But he has to, at the point we've come down to now, he has to acknowledge her strength, her realization that she's been able to pass this far into the after-death world. And he says, your strength deserves no trivial crown. It is an achievement which has to be acknowledged. And since he is the god also of law and justice, he can't help recognizing that. So he offers to her, he says, "I can give you, you have to go back, you will not get Satyavan, but I can give you the kind of things which people want to have in their life. I can make your lonely life more pleasant, more agreeable. So choose," he says, "choose a life's hopes for thy deceiving prize." Then Sri Aurobindo describes how within Savitri something moves. She has some kind of inner experience. And at last she says, "I bow not to thee, O huge mask of death." And she says, "I'm not one of these people who are just clamoring for what fate will allow, what life can give." She says, "Mine is the labor of the battling gods, the gods who are imposing on the slow, reluctant years the supreme will, the flaming will that reigns beyond the stars. Those are the gods, the powers that are moving the whole process of manifestation forward towards its fulfillment. I have that power in me. So if you are going to give me something, if you are offering me something, I demand first whatever Satyavan, my husband, desired and had not for his beautiful life. Give if thou must, or if thou canst, refuse." She's rejecting his claim of being generous and giving boons and so on. She says, "This is what I'm asking you. Give if thou must. Not out of generosity, but because you have to. And if you can, refuse. You don't have to give me this." But of course she knows very well that he does have to give. So this is very different from the traditional telling of the tale that we have in the Mahabharata. No? And of course he has to assent. So he gives her this boon, the first boon, which is the return of Dyumatsena's sight and kingdom. Dyumatsena the king, the father of Satyavan, is an exiled king who's in exile because he is blind. So death says, I give him back his sight and his kingdom. Let him have. Let him have all the royal trappings for his peaceful age. No? I'm giving back all the things that were taken away. He mocks these gifts. He says, the goods I restore, the deluded soul prefers to impersonal nothingnesses, bare, sublime. The deluded soul, a soul that is identified with the world, prefers to have these peaceful trappings, these royal trappings and so on. And of course, it prefers to have the sensuous solace of the light. He will be able to see again. But death says, by remaining blind, he could have found a larger realm, a deeper vision. We spoke about this tradition that the blind have the possibility to see much more and much more deeply than those who have the outer sight and are turned towards the outer appearances. So he says, this is what I'm giving back. Because for that, this man, Satyavan, desired and asked in vain while still he lived on earth and cherished hope. That's where we stopped last time. Patty, would you read? Back from the grandeur of my...
Back from the grandeur of my perilous realm. Go, mortal, to thy small permitted sphere. Hasten swift-footed, lest to slay thy life, the great laws thou hast violated. Move. Open at last on thee their mortal eyes. But Savitri answered the disdainful shade. World spirit, I was thy equal spirit bold. My will too is a law, my strength a god. I am immortal in my mortality. I tremble not before the immobile gaze of the unchanging marble hierarchies. They look with the stone eyes of law and fate. My soul can meet them with this living fire.
Thank you. Oh, now he's given her a gift, and he tells her, well, now go back, you human being. You mortal who are subject to death, go quickly, hasten, swift-footed, lest to slay thy life, the great laws thou hast violated, moved, open at last on thee their marble eyes. He's suggesting that she has broken some cosmic rules, some cosmic laws by following Satyavan into these subtle worlds. No? You have violated these great laws. They've been turning their heads away and not noticing, but now you'd better go back quickly, otherwise they will open their eyes and see you and something dreadful will happen. He doesn't say what. It's a threat. Go back quickly. He is treating her just like a human woman, an ordinary person. He's not recognizing her immortality and her strength. So here she has to spell it out word by word, no? World spirit, I was thy equal spirit born. My will too is a law, my strength a God. I am immortal in my mortality.
In which way has she moved the laws?
No, you have violated.
Violated?
And then
moved.
No, now they would get moved. Oh. They've been, they've been remaining still, not responding. But now at last, if you linger any longer, they... I think this is that one thing is that these are rocks, stones, they are things that are not easily moved, no? But I think it is also, he's referring to these basic laws of the material universe, no? In which consciousness seems to be completely turned to stone.
Granite would have been a better word, I think.
What?
Granite would have been a better word instead of marble. Marbles mean a little flexibility.
No, we think of the marble stone. It's one of the hardest kinds of stone.
Marble is softest, one of the softest.
No,
the granite is the hardest. Marble is very soft.
Anyway, you have to think that the poet will use the word that fits in best to his rhythm. He uses this word marble. He speaks of concentrations, marble seats. If we want something to be very, very permanent, a statue or something, we'll look for the best kind of marble. Yes, I was just wondering what to say about these lines. These are not words that we as ordinary human beings in our present consciousness can say. We can't say that I was thy equal spirit born, and that my will too is a law, my strength is a God. And yet, there's a chapter in the Life Divine where Sri Aurobindo tells us that this is actually true of all human beings. He says we shouldn't give ourselves too insignificant a place in the universal purpose. We are here for a reason. We are here to become conscious of the fact that we are carrying the divine within us, and because of that we are immortal, and if our will is in tune with the divine will, then we can really change things. There's a place where he says this right at the beginning in Canto 2, I think. It's on page 20. Sri Aurobindo's describing how, faced with this challenge of the death of Satyavan, he says at the bottom of page 19, her single will opposed the cosmic rule. And he says that at the unseen's knock upon her hidden gates, her strength, made greater by the lightning's touch, awoke from slumber in her heart's recess. Within her heart is this divine power. It wakes up is strength, and it can bear the stroke of that which kills and saves. This power which can destroy can also save, and there is within Savitri a power that's strong enough to bear that stroke. And a few lines further down, it says, this is a general statement, this is not just about Savitri. A magic leverage suddenly is caught that moves the veiled ineffable's timeless will. A prayer, a master act, a king idea can link man's strength to a transcendent force. Then miracle is made the common rule. One mighty deed can change the course of things. A lonely thought becomes omnipotent. So this possibility is within human beings, and it's to fulfill this possibility that we are here eventually, that we are growing and developing in order to make miracle the common rule, to make this link between man's strength and the transcendent force, the force beyond all limits, beyond the boundaries of the manifestation. I think this is a very, very important knowledge that we can gather from Sri Aurobindo. Even those who believe in a transcendent are uncertain whether anything that we can do can change what has been decreed. You know, that there's an eternal order and that we can't do anything about that. Even philosophers who don't speak about a deity, about God, they recognize that there seem to be eternal laws, and then there are the earthly realities. And these two realms don't seem to be connected. But Sri Aurobindo is telling us over and over again that they are connected. Death will tell her that there's an unbridgeable gulf. But Sri Aurobindo is telling her and us again and again that there is a connection. So here he puts it very clear. A prayer, a master act, a king idea can link man's strength to a transcendent force. And something can then be changed. That transcendent force can intervene here. And that's what we're really all here to do, to bridge that gap.
And this is also to be a willing servitor of divine nature, consciousness.
So, here she states it, she tells him straight to his face, World Spirit, I was thy equal spirit born. You are a god, I also am carrying the divine within me. Yes, Don.
I'm a bit confused and lost here. You just said when the class began that the god of death is also the god of law and justice. What did you say?
That is the traditional role of Yama.
But it's not in here.
Sri Aurobindo doesn't refer to it directly, but these hints come up. It's referred to more or less directly, Yama. Who is also, Yama is the god of death, but he's also Dharma. He's the god of rule and law and justice and keeping everything in its right place in the universe.
What is the name again?
Dharma.
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 You know, Aurobindo has said this thing, that we can change the divine laws. Otherwise, no other philosopher or religion says that we can change it. Is it? I think it's unique.
I'm not sure, but I think so.
Whatever, I have read, like,
yes.
Nobody has said that. Man can change the divine laws. It's really unique.
Yes. Yeah, there's a very, very interesting chapter near the beginning of The Life Divine, where he speaks about the individual and the universe.
He speaks many times.
And that there he lays it out really in philosophical terms, that we think of ourselves as small and helpless. But the divine is in everything, and whatever the divine is in, all its power potentially is there. So it's there potentially in each of us. And then he speaks also about the role which humanity is supposed to play in the fulfillment of the universal plan. So, yeah.
The Tina Jambam also said, when so should we change the cosmic law?
Yes, that's what Sri Aurobindo shows Savitri doing in this poem. And he says, that's what we are here for. Or she says, that's what I am here for, to change the old dusty laws. So you can, don't threaten me with those laws. I'm here precisely to change those laws. Yes, Lauren.
Having been born in 1948 and been part of the human potential movement is an attempt. You can make a difference. Various different attempts to wake people up that they're powerful, but they're not nothing.
You're not helpless.
You're not helpless. Yeah. You count. You make a difference.
But still, it's very difficult for us to believe that we can change the laws of physics. Still, there's this biologist, Rupert Sheldrake, who, I don't know whether he's picked it up from Sri Aurobindo, but he agrees with Sri Aurobindo that all these things that we think of as laws, as universal laws, are perhaps only habits that can be changed.
So.
Yes. So it's nice to be reminded of all that. No? So she says, I'm not frightened of these laws that you are telling me about, looking with their stone eyes of law and fate. It has to be like that. It can't be different. My soul can meet them with its living fire. There's the static element of earth, but there's the dynamic element of fire also. So who would read next? Mihong.
Out of thy shadow,
give
me back again into art's flower space, Satyavan, and the sweet urgency of the human beings to do different things, my sweet burning will. I will bear with him the ancient mother's load. I will follow with him earth's path that leads to God, as shall the eternal spaces open to me. Why round the earth strange horizons, far and sea, traveling together, the immense unknown. For I who have trod with him the tracks of time, can meet behind these steps, whatever night, or unimaginable stupendous dawn breaks on our spirits in the untracked beyond. Wherever thou leadest this soul, I shall crush you.
Thank you. Anything to ask about these lines?
This line yells from internal spaces open to me.
She's saying, if you don't give him back to me to take back to the earth, I'm going to continue following. No?
There are no spaces.
We will go wherever you lead us.
So we'll just continue.
Yes.
I will follow with him.
Traveling together the immense unknown. I can follow him wherever you take him. No? Wherever thou leadst his soul, I shall pursue. You're not going to get me to go back. I'm not going to return without him. Yes. Yes, I think so. They're moving away from the physical earth. They've already moved into this subtle world of eternal night, no? And she says, where are we going? Either you give me back Satyavan, or let's see what is the next step on the journey. Yeah. We'll go on. Yeah? Lorraine.
But to proclaim opposed implacable, insisting on your immutable decree, insisting on the immutable law.
Yeah, immutable. Yeah.
And the insignificance of created things. Out of the rolling waste of night, there came, born from the enigma of the unknowable depths, a voice of majesty and a falling storm. As when the storm, hair tightened, striving sea, throws on the swimmer its tremendous laugh, remembering all the joy its waves have drowned, so from the darkness of the sovereign night, against the woman's boundless heart arose, the almighty cry of the universal depth.
Thank you. So this is death, he's insisting on the immutable decree. Something has been decreed, and that decree cannot be changed. He's insisting on the immutable law, the law that can't be softened or lessened in any way to mitigate something. Actually, in law, it does happen, in our law, in human law, it happens, no? That the law can be mitigated. Some exceptions can be made, or some softening or concessions. But he says, this cosmic law, it's an immitigable law, it can't be changed. And he's insisting on the insignificance of created things. Only he and his law are powerful. All these created things are illusory, worthless, transient. So his voice comes like the roar of the ocean. So beautifully described. Do you like to read?
Hast thou godwings or feet that tread my stars, friendly creature with the courage that aspires? Forgetting thy bounds of thought, thy mortal role, their orbs were coiled before thy soul was formed. I, death, created them out of my void. All things I have built in them, and I destroyed. I made the worlds my net, each joy a mesh. A hunger, amorous of its suffering prey, light that devours my image seen in things.
Thank you. Literally, it means that that which devours is in love with its prey, but it's so much in love, it's just going to eat it up. But it's, of course, an allusion to this Vedic image of the whole universe being a hunger, that eating is eating, this process of devouring is really what's going on in the world all the time. The eater eating is eaten, I think. This universal hunger, and that hunger that is death.
What does he mean here? Everything that bounds of thought, that multiple the observed point before thy soul was born.
Yes, this line about their orbs were coiled, I think perhaps refers to the stars. And those stars, my stars, my material stars that I have created, their orbs and their orbits were coiled before your soul was born.
You're saying that your soul was born before you were born.
The stars were born before your soul was born. She is saying something else. She's saying, I'm immortal.
No, the death is speaking now.
Yes.
And I made that, I death people the world, all the death, forgetting that, he's saying, forgetting thy bounds of thought, thy mortal role.
Yes.
Forward to your role. Their orbs were found before thy soul was found.
I was reading this their orbs, as referring to the first line,
the stars.
And he's mocking her. He says, have you got wings, divine wings? Can your feet tread my stars, my stars that have been there all this time since before your soul was born? You're just forgetting your limitations, the limitations of thought. You're forgetting your role as a limited human being, under mortal role, under the domination of death. You are just a frail creature. You are so fragile and so weak. You've got lots of courage that aspires, but you're forgetting your limitations. That's how I understand it. And he's saying also, I am the creator. I'm the one who has set all this up, these stars and these worlds. I created them out of my emptiness. That's where they have come from. I've built all the things that are in them, and I destroy them. I've made the worlds, all the many worlds, as a net. I catch everything in my net of death. He's claiming to be the creator. Yes. That's what she said, but he's not accepting that claim. He says, you're just a frail creature. You may have courage, you may even have some strength and wisdom, but you're forgetting your limitations. He's going to make her prove at every step of the way her strength. No?
I'm just touched by this thing, Doris, that you have two lines for a woman's boundless heart. That's more because to me, it looks like the summary in his words of whatever he described of the savage or savage. And is a woman that is with a head of love, but might also somehow, if you want, to reduce it to a normal double. And so, women, boundless heart, in the sense that here too, hearts.
Yeah, that's
something that is.
That's what nowadays women claim, that we represent the heart and men represent the head. I wouldn't take it too far. But for Savitri, it's definitely true. That's what she represents, is the boundless love of the Supreme Divine Mother, who's come in this human form to save, and to save humanity in the form of the soul of Satyavan, Satyavan, the soul of humanity. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I would say that these poor men, I mean, for that, these poor men can see only a little mortal role.
I hesitate to make these things gender specific, because this boundless heart, it was also in Sri Aurobindo, and I don't want to make these kind of divisions. We are all human beings, and so we have these divine potentialities in us to be developed, all of us. But certainly, as poetry and as its function here, that's what you are saying is right.
Yeah. So I might imagine that this woman's boundless heart is something that I have in myself.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Yes. Oh, yes, surely.
So this poor man, he's not a poor man, he's a god. Might be a woman.
I don't remember.
Death is a mocking.
Yes.
Why is the Almighty crying?
This cry, the Almighty cry, it's a shout. It's a powerful voice. Powerful like the angry ocean, enjoying its power of destruction. Remembering all the joy its waves have drowned. It's a triumphant voice. So now he's going to show us his idea of what humanity is. Shall we go on round this way? Susmita, would you read?
Mortal was whose spirit is my wandering breast, whose presence was imagined by my smile. Free clutching thy pure gaze to thy trembling breast, pierced by my pangs, time shall not soon appease. Blind slave of my death force, whom I compel to seem that I may punish, to desire that I may scourge thee with despair and grief, and thou come bleeding to me at the last. Thy nothingness recognize my greatness known, turn nor attempt for wisdom happy curse, meant for the soul that came obey my door, lest in their sombre shrines they tread away from their uneasy iron hearted sleep, the first who avenge his dear desire.
Thank you. So this is a very terrible, implacable God whose picture he's painting, no? Pretending to be. Your spirit is just my wandering breath. Here you are with your transience, your short-lived existence, something just imagined by me as a joke, imagined by my smile. So you better now flee, you better run away back to earth with these poor gains that you have made. This boon that I've granted to your trembling breast. You are going to have to suffer a lot of pain. Time will, these pangs, time shall not soon appease. You are a human being. You're just a blind slave of my force, and my force is death. It's not going to hear anything that you say. No? I compel you, I drive you, human beings, to sin so that I can punish you. I drive you to desire so that I can scourge you, I can flog you, beat you with the whips of despair and grief, so that in the end you will come crawling to me, bleeding to me at the last. Thy nothingness recognized, my greatness known. So turn around. Don't attempt to enter forbidden happy fields that are meant for souls that can obey my law. I do give them some kind of heaven. If you make that attempt, you may wake up the furies, these terrible tormenting spirits who avenge fulfilled desire. They're creatures in Greek mythology. You may win what you want from the gods, but then the gods will send the furies to torment you. They are sleeping, but their sleep is uneasy. They will wake up easily, and they are iron-hearted. Oh. These furies who avenge fulfilled desire.
The avenge fulfilled desires. Even if the desires are fulfilled, then gods avenge again.
Yes.
You are not fulfilled, you are spoiled. It's fulfilled, again you are arranged.
Yes. No escape.
Yes.
And he continues, Paula, you read this.
Dread lest in skies where passion hoped to live, the unknown's lightning start and terrified, lone, sobbing, hunted by the hounds of heaven, a wounded and forsaken soul thou flee through the long torture of the centuries, nor many lives exhaust the tireless wrath hell cannot slake, nor heaven's mercy assuage. I will take from thee the black eternal grip, clasping in thy heart thy fate's exiguous dole. Depart in peace, if peace for man is just.
Thank you. So the general tenor of it is clear, no? This is, what have you got done?
Oh, exiguous.
Exiguous, yeah.
Exiguous
is something that's inadequate.
Scanty in measure or minute in size.
Yeah. And then this word slake, the anger that hell cannot slake. You have to slake your thirst. You're terribly thirsty, you have to drink something. And assuage, of course, to soften, to cure. It's more interesting to look at Savitri's answer. Don, you will read, please.
But Savitri answered, meaning scorn is scorn. The mortal woman in the dreadful world. Who is this god imagined by the night, contemptuously creating worlds disdained, who made for vanity the hidden star? Not he who has reared his temple in my thoughts and made his sacred floor my heated heart.
My God is will and triumphs in his paths. My God is love and sweeting suffers all. To him I have offered hope for sacrifice and gave my longing of the sacrament. Who shall forgive it or hedge in his course? The wonderful, the charioteer, the sweet. A traveler of the million roads of life, his steps familiar with the lights of heaven, tread without pain the sword-paved course of hell. There he descends to end eternal joy. Love's golden wings have power to fan thy void. The eyes of love gaze starlight through death's night. The feet of love tread naked hardest world. He labors in the depths, exults to the heights. He labors in the depths, exults on the heights. He shall remake thy universe, O death.
Yes, thank you.
He's telling him off.
Yes. So wonderfully, no? How can we believe in a God who compels us to sin so that he can punish us? No? Nonsense. The God that I worship is very different, she says. My God is will and triumphs in his power. What he sets out to do, he will succeed with. And my God is love and sweetly suffers all. Here the word suffers means allows, permits.
Allow, permit. Allow.
Or permit.
Okay.
He suffers a child's cry out of love for
me,
poor child.
Yes, that's... In the New Testament, Jesus says, suffer the little children to come unto me. No, the disciples were shooing them away. They didn't think that the children should bother Christ. He said, suffer them, allow them to come to me. To him I have offered hope, my hope for sacrifice, and gave my longings as a sacrament. This is what I'm offering, my sacrifice to the Lord. And who is going to limit him? Who shall prohibit or hedge in his course? The wonderful, the charioteer, the swift. The God that I worship, he travels the million roads of life. His steps are familiar with the lights of heaven, but they also are able to tread without pain the sword-paved courts of hell. There he descends to edge eternal joy. I wonder if we can really grasp or understand this line. But he is love. God is love and the golden wings of love. He asked her, have you got God wings and feet that can spread my stuff? And she says, love's golden wings have power to fan thy void. He, the power of love, the God of will and the God of love, he shall remake thy universe, this iron, marble-eyed, iron-hearted, marble-eyed universe of law and fate.
Who is referring to 355 onwards?
Sorry?
She's referring to God.
She says, the God that I worship.
Here is written in small letters, E.
Yes.
Here he descends.
Yes, Sri Aurobindo doesn't always put a capital.
No, not always.
No. Yes. Our great friend, the late Dr. M.V. Nadkarni, who was a great student of Savitri and speaker on Savitri, He used to say that the three most difficult words in the poem are he, she, and it. And we have found that this is the case, no? That it's often difficult to tell exactly what these pronouns are referring to. But here it's quite obvious, no? My God. Marianne, shall you read?
She spoke, and for a while no voice replied. While still we traveled in the darkest night, and still that dream was left before the eye, troubling the darkness with the dark wounds. Then once more, in the deep and perilous cold, in that unreal torment,
thank you. So the journey goes on. Still, the three of them are still traveling through that trackless night. And still that gleam was like a pallid eye. That gleam is savitri. That gleam, pale. It's only a gleam, it's not a very bright light. It's a pale, faint light, no? It's troubling the darkness with its doubtful gaze. It's not anything very strong or affirmative. No? And then once more a pause. Death made answer to the human soul. And he asks her, what do you want really? What are you asking for? What is your hope? You seem to be asking for your husband back. No? This is your body's sweetest lure of bliss. This is the highest bliss you can imagine. Your body, which is attacked by pain. It's a frail, precarious form, always at risk. Just for a few years to please your senses, your faltering senses, with this honey of physical longings, the heart's fire, and this vain oneness you are seeking, the oneness that love seeks. You want to embrace the brilliant idol of a fugitive hour. Just for now, you are in love with Satyavan. He's just a shining image of what you want, no? And it will not last. And he's making answer, he refers to the body, but he's making answer to the soul that says, I am immortal in my mortality. No? You soul, what are you? You're just a dream made up of brief emotions, glittering thoughts, It's like a dance of fireflies speeding through the night, little sparkling lights here and there. No? A sparkling ferment in life's sunlit mire. Mire is sticky, dirty mud. And where there's swamps and dirty mud, then things ferment and that they give off gases. And in the night, we can see those gases, misleading lights, sparkling ferment in life's sunlit mire. Are you going to claim immortality? You're defying all these eternal witnesses, the universal powers, that you, Savitri, and he, Satyavan, are really endless powers, that you will last forever. I'm the only thing that lasts forever. Death only lasts. And the inconscient, the emptiness where there is no consciousness. I only am eternal and enduring. That's his claim. Everything will come to me in the end. So he goes on for a long time, another page and a half. But then Savitri will answer him. So we'll leave that for next week. Stop there for now. We can listen to Mother reading some passages from this canto.
Black lie of night to the cowed soul of man. Conscious of immortality, I walk. First, I demand whatever Satyavan, my husband, waking in the forest of charm, out of his long, pure childhood's lonely dreams, desire, and had not, for his beautiful life, give, if thou must, or if thou can't forsooth. This bowed his head in scornful cold assent, uplifting his disastrous voice, he spoke. I yield to his blind father's longing heart. Kingdom and power and friends and greatness lost and royal trappings to his peaceful age, the pallid pomps of man's declining days, the silver decadent glories of life's fall. Savitri answered with disdainful shape, "World spirit, I was thy equal spirit born. I am immortal in my mortality. I tremble not before the immobile gaze of the unchanging marble hierarchies that look with stone eyes of law and faith. My soul can meet them with its living fire, wherever thou leadst him, soul, I shall pursue." Against the woman's boundless heart arose the almighty cry of universal death. "Hast thou God wings or feet that tread my stars? Frail creature, with the courage that aspires, forgetting thy bounds of thought, thy mortal role, I will take from thee the black eternal grip, clasping in thy heart thy faith. Seizing with gold, departing peace, if peace for man is just." But Savitri answered, meeting scorn with scorn, "The mortal woman to the dreadful Lord. Who is this God imagined by thy night, contemptuously creating worlds disdained? Who made for vanity the brilliant stars? Not he who has reared his temple in my thoughts, and made his sacred floor my human heart. My God is will and triumphs in his power. My God is love and sweetly suffers all. Love's golden wings have power to fan thy voice. The eyes of love gaze star-like through death's night. The feet of love tread naked hardest words."
Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.